Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. An exquisite aria that is probably not very, very well known. It is by Henri Rabaud, a late 19th century French composer. He lived actually until 1949. And this was from Roland et le Mauvais Garçon, the opera. It was sung by our guest today, Brian Heimel, who is causing quite a stir amongst the musical public with his glorious voice. Welcome to Crossover, Brian. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Yeah, I'm from New Orleans, born and raised there.
So you speak French as well?
I wish I did, but all the French people moved away from New Orleans. They went west to Lafayette and Lake Charles and stuff like that. So my father's family is there.
Right?
But my mom is a city girl, so when they got married, my dad moved to the city, so we kind of, and her family is Italian, so we have very kind of cultural Italian DNA in there.
Well, that's very good for opera, I think.
Yeah, of course, I know.
It's a good mix. So you don't speak French, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, not fluently. I mean, functionally. I've worked in Paris and Bordeaux and Toulouse and so I do have that, but I was asked to do some interviews in French, and I don't feel comfortable enough speaking.
I can't speak
in the same nuances about this album and such.
Well, the album speaks for itself. I have to say, you're very, very all of the arias are. Well, it's heroic, and it certainly is. They're heroic, and they utilize your voice, I think, the complete range.
For sure.
Yeah. It's a silly question, but most demanding. I mean, you have styles here. You have Berlioz, which is very specific. You have mm-hmm. Verdi. You have Massenet, which is slightly different. I mean, Rossini, of course.
It's funny. Which one is most demanding? It's hard for me to say that. I mean, I would say the Guillaume Tell, obviously, with all the high C's, is demanding, and also the fact that it's just a big long scene. I think it's right around between 10.5 and 11 minutes.
Wow.
But technically, which the one is maybe the most demanding? I mean, so let's say Guillaume Tell for stamina. Technically, I would say the Jerusalem aria, the Verdi, the second Verdi, is very tricky. It sounds simple and a very kind of like easy, beautiful melody. But the way that it approaches the top, because you see the Jerusalem was not written in French. It was written first in Italian and then translated. They came up with a French translation. And I think it's not as organic as, say, the Les Vêpes Siciliennes, which Verdi wrote to a French libretto. So I would say that for me, that was the most challenging one. It was also the one that one of the ones I didn't know when we started out to do this project. I mean, I had heard it, but I had not sung it before.
It's very interesting how the language impacts on the, of course, you'll say, of course, but on the vocal production, because I know that singing French is not like singing Italian.
It's not.
It's technically,
not
a, right?
Sure, sure. I would say, you know, what is difficult about singing French is the closed vowels, mm-hmm. the yes, U yes. and the E's.
Right.
In order to make them so they sound like the true vowels, so that the word sounds like the word that it is, you have to find a way to make it specific enough in your mouth, but have your throat kind of mm-hmm. neutral and relaxed so that the air moves through. And you still get that kind of beautiful sound while it's still being the correct word.
Because if you change it, it's not right. And even speaking French, I mean, it's the production of French is very different than an open-throated Spanish or Italian, you know, something like that.
Sure.
Music of Alfred Bruneau from his opera L'Attaque du Moulin, we just heard Adieu, Forêt Profonde, performed by our guest today, tenor Brian Heimel, with the Prague Philharmonia, conducted by Emmanuel Villaume. Brian, tell us a little bit more about your background.
Well, I'm from New Orleans, born and raised there. I went to Loyola University there to do my studies. I also, before that, went to New Orleans Center for Creative Arts to study piano. So this is a school that was started by Ellis Marsalis, who is the father of Winton and Bradford and DeFeo and all those guys. So, you know, I've been really, really blessed to have great musical education all the way through, you know, starting back in fourth grade with my first piano teacher and band director and choir director. As you can tell, I kind of jumped full force into the music realm, but not necessarily knowing I was going to end up in singing.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. You were an instrumentalist, I mean, to begin with.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I think if a genie gave me three wishes, one of them might be to be a jazz trumpet player, because I likened it to, you know, being a jazz trumpet player from New Orleans is being like, a tenor in Italy. It's kind of like those are the princes of the city. But, you know, I got braces, and so that kind of derailed that a little bit. So then I threw myself more into piano, and I did a lot of church organ music and stuff like that. But when it came time to audition for college, university, I auditioned in piano and in singing, and I got scholarship for both, but I was encouraged to explore my talent in singing. Because at that point I've been studying pianos, like I said, since I was nine. But as far as getting the idea and getting to know the operatic technique and how you use your voice in that way, and to start building it, it was kind of uncharted territory. So I decided that I would give it a shot, give it a year. That's what they convinced me to do. And they were like, well, if you're not happy with opera after a year, then you can always go back to studying conducting. Because I kind of wanted to be a Broadway conductor because I love the theater. I love the jazzy music. And, you know, I really responded to that.
You are a special animal because you are a singer, and a lot of singers will take offense, that understands music.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's true. I mean, nothing, you know, it's just the path that was laid before me, you know. I mean, it's not like they kind of set me up for this. It's, you know, my parents would say, we kind of couldn't keep you away from the piano and trumpet and stuff like that. And so, you know, I think it was a blessing, you know, because in a lot of ways, many singers come out or they've kind of grown up with this kind of singing thing. And, you know, it's like they're the special one who does that. I mean, when you're playing second trumpet or you're playing organ at church, you don't get that same kind of feel.
There's a wonderful voice out there, Stephen Costello, who also played trumpet. He was a trumpet.
Yeah, my buddy from AVA.
That's right. And also trumpet. I mean, that's what he did. And then he kind of discovered that he had a voice.
Actually, I'll tell you a funny story. The first Christmas holiday season I was at AVA, because Stephen and I were both trumpet players and there were a couple other brass players, we put together a brass quintet that played Christmas carols before the dinner as kind of a fun side thing. It's kind of, you know.
Well, but I think for people that don't, you know, really know too much about the vocal production and also playing a wind instrument, I mean, you know, is there any similarity at all about breathing or placement or anything like that?
I think especially about the breathing and also about the kind of lung development and kind of getting, I mean, the principles of singing and trumpet playing are not that dissimilar. I mean, the difference would be that for the trumpet, your lips act as the vocal cords that when you're singing, you know, but taking in a nice, relaxed, kind of open breath and then sending it back out without forcing it out, just kind of letting it ring out, are exactly the same principles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that having started that at such a young age, 9 years old, that kind of an action of taking in the air and then putting it back out is very, and having it come out as a sound, not just as, you know, someone who's breathing or an athlete who's, you know, kind of doing it as a runner or something else. And so, yeah, there's just something in there that definitely put me on the right track by studying a wind instrument.
Yes, certainly. And it's a lot different than being a violinist and singing. So, you know, it's a very different approach.
It's much more organic for singing with it, you know, being in the lungs.
M'appelle, que dois-je craindre encore? De la France bannie, captif au sein d'une ville infidèle, je ne pourrai combattre dans mon zèle pour les ingrats qui m'ont injustement puni.
Music of Giuseppe Verdi from Jerusalem. We heard L'Emir auprès de lui m'appelle, performed by our guest today, tenor Brian Heimel, with the Prague Philharmonia, conducted by Emmanuel Villaume. So you went to AVA, which was probably the best thing you could do. I mean, AVA produces some of the most wonderful artists. And and tell us, you know, then what happened? I mean, how many albums have you done, actually? Is this the first one?
This is the first one. Yeah, it's the first one. I mean, we've been lucky since it's been so well received that they're already talking about the second one, which is actually in some ways they already had plans and ideas for it before this one was released. But it's kind of been solidified now that it's been received as well as it has, because you just don't know in this day and age where recordings are not, you know, being sold by the hundreds of thousands like they were. I mean, I think somebody said Anna Trebko's big breakout album sold 650,000 copies. I mean,
well,
it's just unheard of now at this point.
Well, the other thing is the kind of music that you're singing. You're not singing La Boheme. You're doing Verdi and you're doing Meyerbeer. These are and these are people just don't they don't run to buy, you know, albums.
Yeah, I think, but you know what? We talked about that, and I can tell you that the second album will not be quite so off the beaten path. But you know, it was important for us to take a CD and to make a CD, you know, because we didn't know how it was going to go and if I would get to make another one. So I wanted to make one that was really representative of what my voice does and what my career has been about. I think the people who already knew my name, who had, you know, were aware of the Troyen, the Berlioz and things that happened in London at the Met and stuff like that, those people would buy my record kind of anyway. And then now seeing how it would go, From there, I think we can go. I mean, there are so many records. When you look at, you've got Luciano Pavarotti, and you've got all the guys of the past, the Caruso and Gigli, and then even some of the more recent tenors singing all of these ones. It's kind of like, I didn't want to just be another tenor who makes an album of pretty standard, normal music. It's just, it's not as interesting. And then from an artistic point of view, for me, that's more commercial.
Well, of course, and they're always comparing, but of course, every voice is different. And would you say you have a darker quality as a tenor?
I guess it depends, darker than whom. Maybe than some, I mean, I don't
Pavarotti,
know.
Pavarotti, or Gigli.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have very Italianate sound. I don't know if darker is that as much as the color or the kind of whatever. I mean,
open.
Usually darker has, I don't want to say a bad connotation, but usually a darker tenor voice, and I'm doing it to my voice right now,
yes,
you
it's
make
a heavier,
it sound,
heavier sound
that
yeah.
way. Mm-hmm. And I try not to make my voice sound any other way other than how it is, you know, in its most kind of unencumbered, non-manufactured sound. And I think that's what makes things really unique. I think I sing in an Italianate style, but I don't have a typical Italian sound.
Yes, so it's I don't want to say darker, but
no. It's just funny, you know, because people say, oh, Kaufman or this one and the other ones,
yeah.
and like, you know, more baritonal,
right.
You know, I would say that if you really keep your throat neutral and relaxed and you support all the way up, whatever sound you have in the middle of your voice should go all the way up to the top.
Really?
But not everybody has that, you know. So, and I think what makes my voice different is, you know, voices that usually sing a lot of the repertoire that we're doing here, like Juan Diego Flores,
right.
someone who has a much
right.
kind of brighter, I would say.
Yes.
He
yes.
definitely has a bright.
Very bright.
You know,
in
the line of Alfredo Kraus, these kinds of, you know, and I don't know that it's if it has to do with because he has the kind of Latin feel in there, or the kind of Latin lineage, as it were. But yeah, I mean, there is a definite tone, you know, if you say, because you could liken Villazón to Domingo and certainly the Italian lines of them. I don't know. I don't fall into any of those ones. And I would say when I started singing, it was Luciano Pavarotti that I kind of first heard and first got really excited about.
Right.
And so maybe I tried to sing in that way, but I realized that that wasn't really my honest voice.
Mm.
So when I accepted that, then the world of possibilities opened, and I would have never found this French kind of, as you say, obscure repertoire had I not let go of that.
Yeah. And of course, the language doesn't help either. Italian's nice to sing. French is difficult.
I can tell you, the second album will definitely be Italian.
Well,
there are many people who are fans of mine who've been like, come on, sing us some Lucia, sing us some Bohème, which I'm actually in the middle of a run in Dallas right now, and it's great. I love that role.
Music of Giacomo Meyerbeer from L'Africain. We heard Pays Merveilleux, performed by our guest today, tenor Brian Heimel, with the Prague Philharmonia, conducted by Emmanuel Villaume. What are you doing these days? You're singing in... What are you doing? I mean, what is your schedule?
Down in Dallas, we're two shows into a 6-show run of La Bohème. I sang 6 performances of Bohème at the Met earlier this season. And then, so I finished this, and then my wife and I will welcome, God willing, our second child the beginning of April.
Wonderful.
Yeah, another daughter, so we're thrilled about that. And then I finished kind of my relaxing vacation, as it were, where we welcome her in April, and then I go out to San Francisco to start rehearsals for Les Troyens. And I'll do that there, and then I go to Santa Fe and do Rigoletto, and then I go to Washington to do Carmen. So I like to straddle that line between French and Italian. I think that they both, it's like a yin and a yang. You know, the Italian, if you sing too much in Italian all the time, you have to be really disciplined to let your voice not get too open.
Right.
And with French,
yes,
if you sing too much French, you can then get yourself
tight.
Closed
yeah,
off.
Yeah, it's so, that, the French is I think it's the most difficult language. Well, I don't know
it's
about
really
Russian.
Difficult. Yeah, that's true. I've sung in Russian, and I tell you, I can't even tell you how easy or difficult it was, because I was just going on, you know, I kind of learned it by rote with the wonderful Russian coach that we have at AVA. But, I didn't even know if I was doing it right. I was essentially just being a parrot and then, mm-hmm. you know, trying to make the vocalism as good as I can. Whereas at least, you know, with the French and Italian, I know the difference between doing it right. And
well, you
doing
know the French
right.
And you certainly know the Italian. And obviously, whatever you're doing is just fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
And you look extremely attractive.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate
that. It has absolutely nothing to do with your voice, but you certainly look good. So.
What doesn't hurt, I guess, right?
It doesn't hurt. But again, so this is this the first album, basically?
Yes.
First
album.
And are you, you said that you're going to be doing some others as well.
Yeah, it's the first solo album. I've been on other recordings and in DVDs and stuff, but this is the first one that if people buy it, they got me and that's it, you know?
Well,
so,
they sure do. And
yeah.
And how about performance? Is anything in Philadelphia scheduled?
You know, I have this just this little event at AVA that we're doing Monday, and it's a record, not necessarily a release, but it's kind of like a publicity event. I'm going to sing two pieces from the album. We'll have CDs there for purchase, and I can autograph them, and we'll have a question and answer session where people can ask about the process of making a recording and how mm-hmm. this came about and how do we pick the repertoire and,
right.
and that kind of stuff. I really actually enjoy that because there are a lot of questions that arise, like you said, from doing an album like this and why this as opposed to that. And the AVA crowd, the patrons and the audience that they get are really interested in
yes,
the art form
yes,
and
yes.
the singers, and so I'm really really looking forward to that one.
Well, we're looking forward to more albums from you, Brian.
Thank
and you're
you.
Really you're making a mark, and it's a joy to speak with you. And keep in touch, please, and let us know any Met appearances anymore that you have down the line.
I got 10 performances of La Boheme at the Met next year. So a few in January and a few in it's either March or April. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Eileen Perez, another AVA graduate,
sure.
is also going to be in some of those. I don't know what the overlap is, but I know she's doing some of them, and then somebody else is doing some of the other ones. I mean, the schedules opera singers keep at this point, it's like, oh, I'm in Germany and France and London and New York and da 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 da. So it's
yes.
hard to keep it straight, but if you go on the Met website, you can see, and then all the kind of Philly, North Jersey, South Jersey people can kind of get out there and come see the local ones at AVA. We were just, you know, there singing on that stage not that many years ago. I mean, 5, 6, 7 years ago.
And again, what are the dates for that?
The dates are four or five in January, and then another five in April. April or May or something. But if you go on the Met website and look at their 15-16 season, you pull up La Boheme and they'll give you all the
and
dates
there you
and
are.
Who's singing what.
But
yeah.
How about an album? This is the first one, the FOE.
This is the first one, yeah. The second one, we're trying to find when we would get to. We're trying to decide who the orchestra is going to be, who the conductor is going to be, and whose schedule, who's available when and where we can do it. We're looking to do it in Italy with a certain orchestra and a certain conductor. I know when I'm free. I know when they're partially free, so we're just going to have to try and see what, you know. We want to let this first Eroic have its time to breathe and kind of get known. Because as you said, I think it's going to take a little bit longer for people to warm up to this because it's not the Bohème and Nessun Dorma.
No, but the voice
like
is there, and I think that's what's causing the stir. So, but again, yeah. it's heavier. I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of I'm young. You know, I'm 35. I don't want to push my voice too fast because you know you burn out. And then everybody's going to say, oh, it could have been this, or you just don't want to do that. So rather than
that's smart.
Than going and like kind of chasing after that carrot, which of course everybody wants to do the Aidas and the Trovatores and these big, like kind
big,
of grand
big,
Italian
yeah.
operas.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you have to let your voice
choose.
Mature and grow in a way that is most healthy.
That's very
you know?
Intelligent, I think.
Yeah,
the worst thing you can do is to overdo too soon.
And we have too many examples to look at for that. You know, it's just it's a shame, but you can understand how it happens. Because
well, I think people are exploited too. When you're a right
for yeah. sure. I can tell you, I've had to fight a lot of that. I mean, exploited. It's just they just want to. Everybody wants to capitalize upon the momentum that's going, and especially now the digital age with the internet and everything else. You want to get it like strike while the iron is hot, because that time that the iron will be hot now is very short.
And also, I also think there's so much competition out there. In a sense, I mean, there are a lot of people out there, but it's like an instrument. It's not any different than an instrument. You need to ripen. You need to become mature. You have to learn.
Absolutely.
Oh, things happen. You know yourself that 10 years ago you sang something very differently than you do now.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think also too, you know, what helps me is to try, as I always try to approach this from an artistic point of view, from an artist and not from an entertainer, quote, point
right.
of view, because that's just about going out and singing shows and that's fine. Nothing against them. But I think to be an opera artist, you have to think a little bit more long term, because there's a catalog of music that was written for voice, you know, for a voice like mine, for different kinds of voices. And you want to like easily make your way through that catalog, as opposed to just burning through it. I mean,
well, can you sing like this? What do they call it? Like a lyric tenor, say? Is there
yeah,
such a
I
thing?
Mean, I would say that I'm a lyric to what they might call a spinto, but it's some people might make their voice bigger by kind of like pushing it, and I refuse to do
no,
that.
No, no,
I just am not going to push it past what I think is, you know, they say, you know, when you're in school and stuff, you never sing on the capital. You only want to sing on the interest, you know, because that way the capital will keep growing, and that way the interest will always be added and not taken away, you know, and that's how you keep your voice as fresh as possible, you know, and unfortunately, you know, there like I said, there are too many. We don't have to think back very far to see who were out there making big splashes.
Mm-hmm.
Just a couple of years ago, who now their careers have kind of fizzled out. They've had to go to other things. I think that, you know, there is pressure from opera companies, from managers, from record companies to do this. I mean, just last night, and this is not the fault of my manager, but I'm traveling between performances of La Boheme. I had a matinee yesterday. I flew from Dallas, but my flight was delayed. So I left Dallas at 9:30. I got into New York at 2:00. Got to the hotel around 2:30, 2:45. Had trouble getting to sleep. Then I woke up this morning. I was here, and this is, you know, the second or third in a slot of interviews that I have. And I leave here, and I go do another couple of things. And we have a release event tonight in New York, which is going to be 2 hours of talking with people, and then another interview after that. And then tomorrow I have a photo shoot, and then I fly back to Dallas tomorrow night and sing a show the following day. So,
we call that an abundance of riches. Okay.
Absolutely. I just hope I still have a voice by the time I get to the show on Wednesday.
On that note, you have to stop speaking now, and we look forward to seeing you. It was wonderful talking to you, Brian.
I hope people can come out to AVA on Monday. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And it's Monday, the date again.
The 23rd of March at 6:30 in the AVA Theater. And you can go to the website. It's free admission. There's no charge. CDs will be available and question and answers and autographs and everything. It's going to be a lot of fun.
As we say, as an instrumentalist, merde, wherever you go.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Lovely speaking with you.
Same here. Bye.
Our guest today has been tenor Brian Heimel, who has just released his first album, Héroïque, on the Warner Classics label. Mr. Heimel will be appearing on Monday evening, March 23rd at AVA for the launch of his album. Admission is free, but reservations are required. 215-735-1685. Here now, the aria from Rossini's William Tell, Ne m'abandonne point, espoir de la vengeance. Sung by tenor Brian Heimel, with the Prague Philharmonic, conducted by Emmanuel Viom, and the Czech Philharmonic Choir of Brno. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Patti, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.